Welcome to the No Wrong Answers Podcast Extra Credit Edition. Recently, the Kansas City, Missouri Public School District essentially declared itself a sanctuary district when the school board unanimously passed what it calls a Safe and Welcoming Schools resolution. This resolution prohibits federal immigration agents from entering Kansas City schools without a warrant. It also says any request from immigration authorities for information about students will not be provided without a warrant, and the district says it will continue to not collect data about the immigration status of students and their families. This move comes just weeks after rumors that potential raids by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, would be conducted outside Kansas City area churches filled the metro. Those rumors turned out to be unfounded, and local ICE officials have responded to the Kansas City School District's resolution, saying they already avoid doing investigations in, quote, sensitive places like schools and churches. But Kansas City schools say they want to make sure their campuses are not disrupted by immigration investigations, which the resolution says can significantly disrupt the school environment and interrupt learning. To learn more about why the district decided to take this step, I talked with Dr. Luis Cordoba, the head of the Office of Student Interventions in the Kansas City Public School District. His office is the one in charge of supporting the district's sizable population of immigrant and non-English speaking students and their families. Dr. Cordoba is an immigrant from Mexico himself who was brought to the United States by his parents when he was one. He grew up in East Los Angeles and became a naturalized citizen while working as a California highway patrolman. He's also a licensed drug and substance abuse counselor and has led trainings for Kansas City police cadets on race relations. Dr. Luis Cordoba, thank you for joining us on No Wrong Answers. It's good to see you again.
I'm glad to be here.
I guess I want to ask right away, why have this resolution? What prompted it?
Well, there was much talk about the need to secure, provide a safe environment for our kids. There's a lot of talk about having ICE come in and deport kids from school, from the community, from churches. So all that hype allowed us to consider creating social-emotional support for kids. And in the resolution, it provides that safe environment for kids. But, you know, my question to you would be is how do you create a safe environment when they, once they leave the school, that they are exposed to that same fear, that same anxiety, leading to depression and sometimes suicide? So the resolution really is about a safety place for kids to come.
In the resolution, some of the wording it says, quote, immigration and law enforcement activities significantly disrupt not only the school environment, but they interrupt learning, impede the safety and security of the school environment. What effects are you seeing? What are you talking about there?
Well, the superintendent in his lunch and learn had talked to a student, and in the conversation, deportation came up, and that student began to cry. So when you have a fear of either your parents being deported or even a student being deported, the first thing that comes to mind is how can learning take place in an environment, in the school, when you have that thought in your head. So to us, it's critical that we at least provide them with a sense of safety, a sense of security by the resolution. And we want to look at kids that are in that position. We want to give them some guarantee that as long as you come to our school, then there is a safe zone for you, so you won't have to worry about ICE coming in and picking you up.
You know, local Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials, ICE, have responded. They've quoted in the Kansas City Star since this resolution was passed by the Kansas City Public School Board. In that article, ICE officials say that their policies already, quote, preclude immigration actions at sensitive locations such as churches and schools, unquote. Have ICE agents tried to conduct activities on KCPS campuses before?
To my knowledge, no. So we're taking a proactive approach in saying that if you plan on doing something like that, then you're going to have to show us a warrant. And then our legal department will come in and step in and do whatever they need to do to ensure that the rights of our students are not being violated.
So the response might be to that, why pass this resolution? Why make this what some might perceive as a political statement when there has not been any, you know, kind of practical dealing with this on the ground?
In my opinion, being proactive is better than reactive. So when we talk about a political statement, it really is not about politics at this point. It's really about creating an environment that's safe for kids. And when kids come to our school and they have this preconceived notion that they're going to be picked up and deported by ICE, then we have to make sure that we offer our assistance to them in making sure that they understand that that's not going to happen in our safe zone or safe school zones, and that we're going to take care of their social and emotional needs, and they're not going to be discriminated against because of them, the students not being documented.
So this is more than just a symbolic move in your mind.
I think it is. It's about taking care of kids. I'm an immigrant. And when I came to the United States back in 1960, we had signs that said no Mexicans and dogs allowed. I remember going to the theaters and being placed in the balcony because I was not able to coexist with the regular people, if you will. So understanding the trauma, understanding the anxiety, understanding the fear, and even back then it was mostly prejudice, racial slurs that were, that were addressed to me because I was of Mexican descent. So again, when I look at something like this, I'm looking at the social and emotional well-being of kids. And if you create that environment for them, at least you've lessened the anxiety, or if you've lessened that chance of them being depressed or thinking about committing suicide.
How does it affect a kid sitting in class thinking about these types of things?
Well, even with your children that were born in the United States whose parents are immigrants and are unauthorized to be in the United States, you're sitting there, you're trying to listen to the curriculum. You were a teacher, and you're presenting a lesson plan, and the child's thinking about something else. He's not even into that lesson plan, thinking, well, when I get home, are my parents going to be there? When I get home, am I going to have a home? So these are some of the thoughts that children think about, and uncertainty really creates a fear, and that's trauma. When you're dealing with a child that's has a distorted view of this deportation, immigration conversation, you tend to, go to the route of being depressed or it traumatizes the child, and when you have trauma in your life, you can't do a lot of things.
Do you feel like your district is prepared to deal with those, I think, very intense socioeconomic as well as psychological issues that are raised by some of the concerns you're bringing up?
Yeah, the Office of Student Interventions, which
is where you work, yeah,
where I work,
yeah.
We immediately formed a plan of action to begin letting school principals know that if there is a need where appropriate, and a student, if they feel that a student needs an intervention, if you will, a support, social emotional support, then we would be available on an as needed basis. So we've also let the principals know that we can form, if they want, the students want to talk in group. And this would be a private group for students and the facilitator, whether it be me or one of my social workers, then we would go and do that to lessen. Again, in talking, in journaling, you tend to lessen that anxiety level. And these are some of the strategies that we use to begin looking at the social emotional wellness of all kids in the district.
The district's also recently opened up what's essentially an office of the Mexican consulate in one of your high schools. You call it the Communications Plaza. What is the purpose of that office?
Yeah, Plaza Comunitaria, which is translated into Community Plaza, is a partnership with the Mexican consulate and their foreign government, education foreign government. And the program is for parents of students who have not achieved their elementary and or high school diplomas.
These are the parents.
The parents. Yeah. The online is for Mexican nationals only, because it's working through the Mexican consulate and their foreign government. And it provides an opportunity for parents who wish to attain that diploma or that certification, elementary or high school, that gives them an opportunity to do that at no cost.
Well, you mentioned earlier, you yourself were born in Mexico. You're an mm-hmm. immigrant to the United States. I imagine this issue, these policies must feel very personal.
Yes. And again, talking about this topic takes me back to when I first came to the United States as a 1-year-old child. I didn't have a choice. My mom brought me. So I see a lot of kids coming in to the United States that don't have a choice, but they want to continue working at getting their education or becoming a productive citizen in this community. So when we take that away from them, then what do? When you take away the right to work under the Obama executive order for DACA students, they have a right to work and they have a right to get an ID, a driver's license. Those are the two things that put some of these DACA students through school. And if you take the rug from under those kids, then what are you saying, that you don't value education, that you don't value bright young minds that want to make something of their life, that want to be contributing factors of this economy? You know, I don't get it. I just don't get it. So, yeah, it becomes personal to me. And although I struggled to get to where I'm at today, if it wasn't for special programming, if it wasn't for mentors, if it wasn't for all the support that was around me, I would have been a dropout, and worse, I would have been in jail.
Well, you grew up in East Los Angeles, at least a big part of it. What programs and schooling did you get, if you can remember, that really did propel you on that other path?
Oh, you're taking me back. We're doing a psychology session here, you know. I think in the 70s, they had what I believe is a youth work program that was supported by the federal government, and that provided students to work either at the school to earn money to pay for your tuition money. And I went to a private school only because my mother didn't like the public school system. I got in trouble. I was expelled many times because I was a fighter. And not because I wanted to be, it's because people were calling me names. So when you talk about bullying issues and when you talk about standing up for who you believe,
because of my race, Mexican.
Yeah, because of my racial makeup, my ethnicity, and those were tough days back then. You know, we didn't have the supports that we have today. We didn't have the laws or the policies in our schools that prohibit bullying or discrimination or racial slurs. So again, you know, times are tough. They were tough back then, but you overcome that, you know, with being resilient to your focus, to your energy, to who you are as a person. So to me, it's personal. But back then in the 70s, you had more of a social program support for underprivileged kids, as they called it back then. And I was one of those kids that were underprivileged.
Do you, thinking back to your time growing up in the 70s, do you feel that you, as an immigrant, a first-generation Mexican immigrant, faced the type of stress over deportation, possible deportation, immigration enforcement that students in your district now face?
No. Back then, it was totally different. I went through my citizenship. I got my naturalization papers back in 1982, I believe. Back then I was a police officer, and they passed a law, the penal code, that suggested that peace officers needed to be U.S. citizens. So I was in the process of getting my naturalization papers, but I went in. I had to turn in my visa, and I was a police officer then. I had to turn in my visa, and I was married at the time, going on a vacation with my wife back then, and I didn't have a visa. I didn't have anything to travel, so I went into the immigration department in uniform, and I asked, you know, I turned in my visa. I'm traveling on such and such a date, and I don't have any papers to make that travel. Within 20 minutes, I got my naturalization papers.
That seems unbelievable.
No, it was unbelievable. I didn't believe it myself, but I told him, hey, so I got to go on vacation. I was going to Mexico. I believe it was Cancun, and I got it within 20 minutes. I waited there, but I was in uniform.
You mentioned that you were in law enforcement, I believe the California Highway Patrol.
Correct.
So, I mean, getting back to the original resolution, the policy that we were talking about, I mean, some people would interpret that possibly as oppositional to law enforcement, to ICE or to to people trying to enforce the laws of the country. But you've been on the other side of it before.
Yes.
So, I mean, going back to your days as a California Highway Patrolman, I mean, how do you see this resolution or this policy that your district now is enacting?
The way I would see it is the California Highway Patrol's purpose is to ensure the safety of those traveling on the highways. And that's it. Now, if they wanted to become immigration officers, then fine, then that would be your job, going out and doing, you know, the immigration duties. But as a police officer, it's doing the duties here. And for example, the Kansas City Police Department, you know, they're not immigration officers. They're Kansas City Police Department officers that I'm assuming that would take care of business here in the city. So, you know, with that said, you know, if they want to be immigration officers, then they should go to the immigration department, apply for being an immigration officer, then they can do the immigration duties.
But you are essentially saying the district, right, that these schools inside these campus walls, this is our jurisdiction.
That's correct.
Yeah. You've also worked with the Kansas City Police Department, giving classes.
Yeah, I'm a volunteer. Yeah. I've been volunteering at the Police Department Academy going on 8 years, I believe.
And the purpose of those classes, at least what I can take from your online bio at the school district, is that those classes are intended to be taught about race relations. You are there to teach the cadets about different aspects of race relations. What's the content of those courses?
Well, police officers nowadays are counselors. They're good Samaritans. They're facilitators of de-escalation. They're all these things.
I hear teachers say the same things.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. You know, we serve many roles in either teaching or being a police officer, and I think we are ignorant of some things, and we do unconsciously treat people that don't look the same as we. If you're white, you're white. If you're black, you're black. If you're brown, you're brown, etc. And I think that what I've seen is that we have a lot of ignorance in people's thoughts, how they were brought up, and that ignorance will sometimes get you in trouble. But I think that my approach to it is open your mind. We are all human beings first, and we're all here to respect each other. And if you go to the hoods of East Los Angeles, the first rule of thumb is respect. If you respect a person or a gang member, whoever it might be, more than likely you'll have the same respect coming back to you. So treat people the way you want to be treated, and that's with respect. But there is a lot of ignorance, and there is much education needed to turn those tides around.
And I imagine do you see the same phenomenon in the school district with the people you work with?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And being sensitive to the needs of students, being sensitive to their situation, regardless of what it is, special education, special needs, ELL students, or your students that are in general education, you know, we have to know and we have to understand a child first. And in order for us to be effective teachers, then we need to begin looking at the individual and having some type of respect, even when they blow up at us. We're professionals. We can take that. And by sending a child home for 10 days or 5 days because they threw me the F-bomb, I'm not being much of a professional. What is he going to do at home for 5 days? Nothing. So I would rather just have him calm down and say, come on, can you come and speak to me after? I'm available to you. You know, I'm not going to take it personal. For the many times people threw me an F-bomb in this district, parents included, I tell you, I'd be a millionaire if I collected a dollar for that. So,
well, Dr. Luis Cordova, thank you so much for visiting with me. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thank you.
That was Dr. Luis Cordova, the head of student interventions for the Kansas City Public School District. That was this edition of No Wrong Answers Extra Credit. To download this and past episodes of No Wrong Answers, go to iTunes and search for No Wrong Answers by Fountain City Frequency. We have full episodes drop every Monday and extra credit editions on Wednesdays. Also, you can join the conversation at our Facebook page or find us on Twitter. Just look for the No Wrong Answers podcast.